Yo, it's Prolific Trick. Let's bring the beat back one time.
CKMS 102.7 FM, and you can find us at radiowaterloo.ca around the world. You are listening to Audio Solid. I am your DJ and host for the next hour, Jason Patterson, aka Canadian recording artist Prolific Tricks. Each and every Thursday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., we serve up a fresh new mix of all kinds of music. This week, however, is a very special episode as the band Sleeping Wave will be joining us for an exclusive interview. That's coming up next, right after this. This is Sleeping Wave and Calvary on CKMS 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo.
Question of time and money, now it all ran out. Pieces go flying and boats turn to fire. I keep on walking the wire. Maybe I should let go. Maybe I should
just set the table and then we'll get into some of the questions. I'm looking forward to this.
This is awesome.
So I am here with a Scottish Australian two-piece, Sleeping Wave. We have Simon the vocalist and Miles the guitarist and producer. They live 10,000 miles apart in Edinburgh and Melbourne, and their first single Calvary dropped July the 7th. And here we go.
Hello.
How are you?
I am good. So I mentioned you live 10,000 miles apart. How do you work around the potential issues with that distance? And what does a typical session look like?
That's a really good question. It kind of works in a way, and its benefit, because we can be almost like 24/7. So there's a lot. Basically, we do everything communicating on WhatsApp. And, you know, I'll kind of send a barrage of emails to Simon, and he'll kind of like, you know, pick them up in the morning when I'm sleeping. And we kind of like go backwards and forwards like that in terms of communicating. And then we'll have the occasional catch up, you know, kind of like, you know, we'll phone up and we'll do a bit of a WhatsApp catch up as well. So it, communication wise, it's not that difficult. It's actually pretty easy. What do you reckon, Simon?
Musically, it's a bit trickier because we do everything authentically. Miles tracks all his guitars in his home studio. I do my vocals in my home studio. And then we send them to a brilliant guy here in Edinburgh, Finn, who mixes everything beautifully. But that takes a bit of back and forth as well to get the sound right, the gel between the vocals and the guitars. This was our debut, Cavalry, and it was a painstaking process getting it just the way we wanted it. But we've had a lovely reaction to it, so we're thrilled with the sound. It's not an overcooked, overprocessed sound, which we were fearing it might be doing things digitally. But the music, I think, has stayed as authentic as we wanted it. Really pleased with it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Tell me the backstory of how you met in UK radio, and what was that experience like for both of you?
We were just talking about this before, actually. We had to kind of like, how did we meet? 1999, we figured it out, was how we first met.
Okay.
Working as copywriters or creative writers. I think they might be called creative writers in Canada. And we were kind of like...
we were ad men.
In the back rooms, kind of writing the commercials and the promos and things like that.
Right.
And I just moved. I just moved to the UK from New Zealand at the time. And I was living just outside of London in a place called Reading. And Simon, you were in Wolverhampton?
Yeah, I was in Wolverhampton. So I'm a Manchester boy who's lived in Wolverhampton and now up in Edinburgh. But our paths kept crossing at company events, and we would talk about music. We may have drunk a few pints of beer. Sure. And we just kept the connection like you do these days over social media. And then a couple of years ago, we just started to talk about music again.
Yeah, we did briefly work together in the same office in London for a while. Yeah. I don't think we really talked about music.
We talked about music, Miles. I remember us having a pulp conversation.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Yeah, maybe
that night.
A few too many pints were drunk that evening.
So how does the sleep work schedule, how does that work? How do you make that work?
Well, we've got a 10-hour time difference. Mm. So the most important thing is that we've got these 3 to 4 precious hours in the morning when we can just, you know, have chats like this. I work shifts for my day job, so I quite often have 3 days during the week, and that coincides with Miles' evening time in Melbourne. So if he's not playing music or playing tennis, we can connect like that as well. So there is an overlap, which works well with the technology we've got these days.
Yeah, for sure. The technology helps, like being able to do this interview too. Where did the name come from, Sleeping Wave? Where did that come from?
That was, we were kind of like playing around with a lot of different kind of ideas. And I think that it kind of came from, I don't know if you're familiar with a band from the early 90s called Ride. They were on Creation Records in the UK. And they were kind of like pre Britpop, really great band, really awesome. Mm-hmm. And they have this album called Nowhere, and it's got this amazing record cover of this really brooding kind of slowly building wave. And I always just loved that as an image. And we also wanted to kind of like somehow kind of convey that for that, well, we're living kind of like worlds apart, and we've kind of, we met in radio, we've got this radio background, you know, what can we have in there that might have something to do with radio, you know, radio waves, but we didn't want it to be too kind of like cheesy. And how about, you know, playing around with all sorts of different things that I'm trying to get hold of Simon and he's sleeping, and we're trying to do this while we're juggling day jobs and other bands as well. And it's this little sleeping project that we've got on the side. And yeah, it just kind of came out of all these different things, I think. So there's no real deep meaning to it. It's more of like all these different things that were there. And I thought, Sleeping Wave, that sounds kind of like, sounds kind of nice. And it kind of fits the music that we're doing as well.
Yeah. It sounds organic. It sounds natural. And that's where a lot of, I think, my inspiration comes for writing lyrics and melody. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that they're not, you know, they're not always obvious lyrics and obvious melodies, but they're ones that sort of sleep their way into your brain when you start listening a bit. But also, yeah, I love being outdoors. We did a little video for Cavalry with landscapes, and I was straight down to the beach. Cold beach in Scotland, but it was a beach.
Nice.
Yeah, the video was fun. Yeah, so we shot that, mm-hmm. and again, that was filmed in the two countries. So I did my bits around a small city outside of Melbourne called Geelong, and that was really fun. I didn't really know what it was about at the stage. Simon just kind of said, just go out and do all of these. I want you to do this and do that. And I'm like, what's the video about? And he was like, don't worry, just go and... just go and film yourself doing this. But it all came together really well.
Nice. Okay, so what was the what's the usual process? Like, who comes up with an idea first? It's probably or does it depend on the song and that sort of thing?
So on this song, yeah. Oh yeah, you go, Miles. Yeah. Go on.
I think it depends on the song. So with Cavalry, I kind of had to look through how did this actually start. And initially it was a bit of a jam that I'd put together on GarageBand. And, you know, it's got kind of like those real key signature guitar riffs in it. And I'd just been jamming around on those. And I sent it to Simon, and he was like, oh, that's really cool. And he completely stripped it back and turned it into more of a song on the piano. And then kind of sent it back to me, and I was like, oh, that's really good, but I do hear it as a rock song. So I took his structure and built it up again, and there's a lot of backwards and forwards like that. Tends to be the stuff that I'll come up with. It'll either be something where I've got it kind of quite formed with some kind of like beats in there and, you know, and a few different guitar layers, or it might literally be me just sitting there with the guitar, not even plugged in, electric guitar, and just going, I just came up with this, and I'll just flick it to him on video. But then Simon comes up with a lot as well, where he's kind of like writing, you know, some really beautiful little snippets sitting at his piano. So it's,
yeah, that's what I do. I'm one of these guys who has to get it out. I'm all about production. You're probably like this, prolific with your prolificness. You've just got to get it out there. A beautiful thing I heard in a song recently by Susan Vega, who was kind of musing on Bob Dylan and how he used to work. There's this line in one of her tracks, Chambermaid. The end line of the song is, don't forget to write. And it's almost like a habit. If I don't get a couple of ideas down every week, I've not lived that week. So that's what I do. I've got a lot of songs coming at you, Miles, which I haven't yet sent to you. He frowns.
Yeah.
But that's Simon, the way I go.
Quite prolific. He sends a lot of stuff. So we've just got this massive folder just full of ideas
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's kind of how I started. I had a friend of mine that's a producer, and I just started sending him demos because I knew he did that sort of thing. And I guess in the back of my mind, maybe he'll see something in this. And that's exactly what happened. So, and I'm constantly sending him stuff. Like, he's like, I don't mind, but sometimes I wonder. Okay, so let's talk about influences to the sound, because we kind of talked about some of the creating of the song that's out and what to expect next. So what about some of the influences?
That's a good one. Like, this is something else we were kind of like chatting about before. And, you know, it's not necessarily what we're influenced in is necessarily what's coming out in the music. I mean, I grew up in Christchurch in New Zealand, which is in the south of the country. And there's a really amazing record label called Fly Nun that just had all this incredible music throughout the 80s and 90s. There's actually a really amazing book written about that label by a Canadian guy called Matthew Goody. And I grew up on a diet of that music, and I was really into punk as well. And then I started to get into a bit of hip hop and reggae and all of the stuff. And it's, at some point, country kind of came into it. And I actually think it was, again, I'm Canadian. It was the Cowboy Junkies that kind of led me down that country route. Like when I first heard, I think the Trinity Session was that album in the late 80s. And it was like, that just absolutely blew my mind at the time. And I still listen to those guys now. So there's all of this stuff that's all in there. And somehow it all kind of comes out. And it's interesting because a lot of what people are telling us we sound like isn't necessarily what we listen to, but we like. So we're getting a lot of people kind of going, it sounds quite a lot like the stuff you do. It's very Tom Petty. It's very Waterboys. It's very Blue Rodeo. You know, there's all this. Some stuff. We like all of these artists, but we're not necessarily going for that kind of vibe, I guess.
Yeah, my favorite one was when someone said we sounded like Sheryl Crow, and I suddenly remembered how often I'd heard her music on the radio when we were in the radio business. That sort of accessible, there's an underbelly of pop to it, but it's got something much more intriguing about it as well. I'm like Miles, I was a genre kind of monster as a kid, just listening to FM radio. So I grew up with the great sort of electro bands like Eurythmics and Depeche Mode. And then when I became a student, it was grunge and indie and Britpop. And I was thinking about, you know, Canadian bands who I love as well. And I remember I went to Canada in 99, and I was in one of the clothes shops there, and I heard this song on the radio, and I said, "Who's that?" And this guy goes, "Oh, that's the Tragically Hip." And I had to go out and buy their album that day in Montreal, I think it was. So I've had that album in my stack for years, and I've just realized, God, Gord Dowie, the way he sings and some of his lyrics, I can hear that influence in what I do sometimes. So you pick it up from wherever you've been and whatever you've heard. But yeah, I just devour music. I love female voices as well. Like I said before, Suzanne Vega, Sean Colvin, Alison Russell. So I will listen to that as well to chill out as much as to sort of get myself going in the morning.
Yeah. And this week I've been listening to Motorhead and the Beastie Boys. So it's, it's kind of whatever comes out. And I guess that track that we've got out, Cavalry, it's relatively kind of like alt rock, but the next one we're going to do is more of quite a dark country track.
Yeah.
And then we've got a third single as well, which we're working on, which has got to be more of almost a bit of a Britpop kind of rocker, I guess. It might come out a little bit different once we've got it recorded.
Right. I all the stuff you mentioned is stuff that I am into and was into. So, and I also I did another interview and the band was saying what what we're influenced by is not necessarily what we sound like. It's the same for me as well. Like, I make hip hop and reggae, but one of my main influences is like Sinead O'Connor. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You wouldn't necessarily ever hear that. So it's interesting because I think it's a common thread.
It's all about a passion for music, and it's just that passion for really great music, and everything goes in there. And depends. Simon will sit down at the piano, and I'll sit down at the guitar, and maybe I've been listening to The Cure, and something completely different comes out, as opposed to when I've been listening to Wilco and getting a bit more country. I mean, and also, like, you know, I play lead guitar in another band, and it's a soul band. You know, Simon's last band was an electronic outfit, so it's a bit of a mixed bag. But primarily, like, when we're doing this, what does seem to come out is more of a kind of like a mature alt rock kind of Americana kind of vibe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and by the way, going back to radio as well, there's still so much space for radio curated shows like you're doing yourself, Jason, in this crazy, over intense music world, because there's nothing like listening to half an hour of stuff you've never heard before. And that to me is what you start tailgating as a songwriter. You're borrowing, you're not plagiarizing. But you hear something good by someone you don't know, and you're like, okay, yeah, that would work. And that's when I'll maybe sit down half an hour later and start working on something.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear that. I've seen The Cure three times.
It's actually one of the coolest things about doing what we're doing is kind of connecting with lots of people, you know, around the world who are doing shows like you're doing, Jason. And it's really amazing connecting with the people who are really passionate about music and, you know, uncovering some just fantastic unsigned independent artists. I mean, I was listening to your show a couple of weeks back, and there was some absolutely really awesome stuff that you were playing, you know, great Canadian stuff. It's like, wow, you know, like, you just wouldn't hear that otherwise. You're just not going to hear it. So that's a really cool part of what we're doing, just kind of finding all these people all around the world who are really passionate and just kind of uncovering and, you know, sharing music.
Yeah, for sure. Even I wouldn't hear some of the stuff that I'm from because I'm doing the show and digging deeper again, as I used to anyways, naturally. But now I'm kind of almost falling in love with some of that again. And some of these genres that I never necessarily abandoned, but it's like, wow, there is all sorts of really good stuff happening, like locally, internationally, and all over. So it's been great in that sense. And on that note, like, is there anybody local to you guys that you think that I should check out, that you've heard on like a station somewhere?
Oh, that's a good question. Trying to think. I mean, God, I live in Melbourne. There's so much. I'm just going to check something at the moment. There was something I heard just the other day.
I've got a little place in my heart for my women of Scotland. Scottish music is very sometimes a rock and indie based, but a couple of artists I really like over here. Hannah Jane, who's kind of upbeat pop but with a very authentic background of instrumentation. She's a multi-instrumentalist. She had a great track out which was, you know, didn't get much further than Scotland, called About These Boys. And I'm also friends with a lady called Pinlight, who does the most sharp melodic retro R&B. That's another, again, unsigned artists. Probably no one else may have heard of them, but people doing their stuff, people writing their own music.
Yeah, I love that.
And from Melbourne, I would say you could check out Grace Cummings. So she's got a new album coming out. She's a Melbourne musician. She's got the most incredible, unusual, deep voice. Really, really cool stuff. So check her out, and just kind of like flying the flag for New Zealand, where I came from. Marlon Williams is one of my favorite New Zealand artists. And if you haven't heard his stuff, check him out. It's just really awesome.
Awesome. I definitely will. That, and hopefully people also will. What did your past experiences in radio kind of help you now in making music as a band, like the other side of things, basically?
I don't know if it helps with making music. I think it kind of helps a little with the getting a head around the how to handle the promotion and
getting
yourself out there. I think it definitely helps with that. It's in terms of the music, I guess, because we've always been around music, been around musicians. You find that like working in radio, even in commercial radio, which we're working at, most people were musicians. And everyone was always going to gigs and particularly working. I've worked in Manchester for a while, which was just an amazing music city. And it was just every second night there'd be someone going to a gig. We've got to go and see this band, this new band. And it was really awesome. So I think it's more of a mindset thing rather than anything else. I think it's just we've been kind of embedded in music for forever, whether we've been in bands at the time and playing or even just kind of working there. But I think it definitely helps a little bit with the marketing promotion side of it, which can get a bit tough, particularly these days, where it's so hard to get, and you'd know about this as well with the music you're doing. It's so hard to get noticed and heard and to get anything out there with so much that's being released constantly. So
Maybe you guys can tell me whether I made the right decision here, but I was offered two jobs and I took the radio job when I was a young boy. And the other job was being a cadet pilot. And that was my choice in that week. And the only thing that took me to the radio station was the thought that I'd be in and around music. Mm-hmm. It didn't get me a hit at the time when I was working in the stations, but I saw how the industry worked. And I definitely enjoyed being with people who knew music.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say I've been doing this maybe 10 weeks only. So for me, like, even in that time, I think to an extent it's helped with navigating things and just kind of seeing a little bit more of both sides. And more stations that are out there, right? Even in talking to you guys, I could be like, so is there, this was one of my questions, like smaller stations in where you guys are, like what would be the equivalent of a CKMS? I've always been into that, just listening to music from around the, I listen to all sorts of like music from and shows from around the world. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Scotland has quite a, Scotland has like everywhere. It has its smaller community stations, its bigger city stations, and then it's got the networked radio, which is by the sort of mega corporations. But there's a couple of guys over here who I would consider to be brilliant radio influencer DJs. One is Jim Gellert-Lee, and one is Ali Braidswood. They both have their own shows on smaller stations. But those are the guys who know music, and that's who you want to gravitate to, I think. I still listen to FM pop radio, and there are some great stations in Scotland. But, yeah, it's finding out the specialist shows from guys like that.
Yeah, and Australia has quite a very large and sophisticated community radio network. So the major cities like Melbourne has – to enormous community stations that are massively music focused. One is called Triple R and the other one is called PBS. And Sydney has it, Perth as well. And they're incredible for music, and that they're really big stations as well. And they actually have a big platform which you can upload your music to as an artist, and all of the hundreds of community stations in Australia can kind of like find your profile. And so it's pretty amazing here. And just in New Zealand, where I, you know, lived before I moved over here, that they have a very sophisticated student radio network. And that was kind of like, you know, my lifeblood as a teenager growing up in Christchurch, you know, 13 years old. And, you know, it was the 1980s. It was too young to go to gigs, and just hearing all of this amazing music on the student radio networks. And again, very sophisticated, like student radio in New Zealand got FM before any of the commercial radio stations did. And they have big listenership. And for me, starting out playing in bands in the early 90s there, those stations were just amazing for, you know, helping us get airplay and just promoting gigs, everything, you know. So, yeah, it's another really cool thing, like just discovering all of these stations that are kind of fly under the radar, I guess, all mm-hmm. around the world that are yeah. doing all this really great work. And we've uncovered some great stations that have just been so supportive of us. It's really good.
That's what's amazing, right? Like we were talking about, like people just passionate about music and sharing it and discovering it. Yeah. And I was also very curious about that. I was also very curious about if you guys had that central national distribution system, because we do. It's called Earshot. And that's a good way for independent artists to, like, it's got kind of a database of all the more local radio stations and national radio stations. And so we do have something similar like that here.
Awesome. Because yeah. Canada is it's really supportive of its of its own, you know, its own music.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have been to Canada once. I went to Winnipeg in the middle of winter.
Okay. Yeah, they call that Winterpeg already.
It was unbelievable. My luggage went missing, and it was like it was minus 30 degrees and my luggage didn't turn up. And it was, oh my God. Yeah, but it was good.
I'm glad it was still good. Sounds like a cold time.
My luggage. Yeah.
Are there a couple of bands that you guys would, like a dream tour, like to tour with?
Oh yes. Sorry. I have to talk about Sean Colvin again. She for me is an artist I've sort of carried since I was a student. I came across her music because they were using it to profile a hi-fi in a hi-fi store. And she's, you know, toured with the greats, Mark Cohn, all these guys who sort of gravitate to her. Katie Tunstall, she toured with her in the States last year. I would love to share the side of the stage with Sean and half sing one of her half songs. That would be my wish.
Awesome.
I think I would go with Jeff Tweedy.
They're touring together.
Oh, really?
They're on a cruise ship.
Oh, the two that you picked.
Yeah, Jeff Tweedy, Wilco for me would just be amazing. You know, he surrounds himself with such incredible musicians. He's such an amazing songwriter, you know, just to try and like soak up as much as I could from him. And just to kind of like, he's got so many cool vintage guitars as well. You know, I'm sure he tours with a few of them, so I'd get to, you know,
meet them,
maybe borrow a couple here and there. But that would be mine, Jeff Tweedy.
Yeah,
awesome. Okay, this I have to ask. So what's some Melbourne and Edinburgh slang that I wouldn't know?
What you wished?
Okay.
Shut your mouth. And in Edinburgh as well, it's so different from Glasgow, which is only 45 miles up the road. They say the M8 motorway that connects the two places is the shortest and the longest motorway in the world because of that. They're very different. And as a Manchester boy moving here, the accents are so different as well. So when I first moved to Glasgow, I was out in a car with a friend and she said, "Oh, I've just been roaring and greeting. And I thought that meant she was happy, but it actually means, you know, she was angry and sad. So you get all these particular phrases from different parts of Scotland. And in Edinburgh, the word "ken" means, "Do you know what I mean?" So if I said, "This is a good coffee, Ken," it doesn't mean anything to do with the guy Ken. It's all to do with, "Do you know? Don't you know?" So wow. Yeah, you hear "Ken" all the time and you think everyone's called Ken, but they're not. Yeah.
That's a good one.
If you ever come to Melbourne, just you'll just hear people just going, "Oh, yeah, no worries. No worries. For anything. Everything's kind of like cool. It's like, no worries." You'll just hear that constantly. Mm. And the indigenous name for Melbourne is Nam.
Okay.
So that's good to know.
Yeah. All right. This one should be interesting. If you could have the song "Calvary" on any soundtrack, any movie or show, what would it be?
Oh, well, I've got a strong choice about that. Probably controversial in some people's eyes, but I want to hear it back. One of Jeremy Clarkson's farm episodes, as his tractor drives into a very dry field and is unable to plow. I hear the cavalry's they say the cavalry's coming, but I have my doubts.
I'll have to check that out. What about, okay,
I'm not any... sure. I'd just like to get into a blockbuster that's going to pay really well.
That's good too.
That's Clarkson's Farm then, Miles. It's the biggest show on Netflix.
I'll have to check it out. I don't know that one. I'll have to check it out.
It's definitely for the farming and large motor vehicle enthusiast.
Okay.
I would love to see ours get picked up for a Coen Brothers film, actually.
Yeah. I would like it in a Wes Craven film as well.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work.
They could work it in.
It'd make it work.
Yeah, they could do it. What non-musical hobbies do you guys have to pass the time when you're not doing all that?
Well, I'm a obsessive tennis player.
Okay.
So it's a bit tricky at the moment because it's the middle of winter in Melbourne, so it does actually get cold here. So it's a little chilly out there in the evenings at the moment. But yeah, I play a lot of tennis, kind of battling through many injuries, but that kind of keeps me pretty active and pretty sane, you know, kind of in between juggling a couple of different bands and working full time and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
I do a bit of acting, so I'm involved in my local drama group here.
Oh, cool.
We do the traditional pantomime, which wasn't so traditional last year. It was kind of a subversive take on Snow White, which is great. So I do a bit of that. I am a bit of a transport geek. That's my day job. So I love trains, planes, and automobiles. They had the military tattoo here in Edinburgh for the festival, and we had a big flyover of some big planes. So I stopped and looked at the heavens for a wee while.
Nice.
I don't know if there's any connection with music and tennis. I'd like to see if anyone's ever done a study, but I know a lot of musicians who don't really like much sport, but they love playing tennis, and tennis is their one thing. I wonder if there's something there, because it's quite a kind of almost a meditative sport. You kind of get into that that zone with it that I almost do when I'm playing guitar as well. So I wonder if there's, yeah, that could be an interesting one for someone to
see. That's interesting, Miles, because I think my transport geekery feeds through to how I write. I write a lot about little road trips and little journeys. Maybe that's a bit of influence leading there as well.
I could definitely see that. Definitely.
For sure.
That's cool.
Let's see. What is the best music advice that you've ever got, and has it actually helped you?
Jeez, okay.
The best music advice I ever had was stop writing stuff you think people want to hear and write stuff that you want to write.
Okay, yeah. That's powerful.
And that's after four or five years in the 2000s trying to get songs published with publishers for commercial bands who were always like, oh, this would be great for such and such. But, you know, you just need to change the lyrics for the first, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh line. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it becomes unrecognizable from the song that you first wrote. So this is great, working with Miles, who loves his instrument. He's got an intimate relationship with his guitars. And for me, it's all about letting lyrics and emotion pour out. And that's a nice combination.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with, this is in 1992. I was playing in a kind of a grunge goth rock band in New Zealand, and we were in this battle of the bands, and it was a really big one. It was kind of like, you know, a countrywide one, and we'd gotten quite far. I think we were in the semi-finals, and we got the judging notes back. And it was all kind of like pretty positive. It was all really good. And there was one judge who said, good shit. Songs do have endings though. And we're like, what does that mean? And we kind of realized that all of our songs were like 5-6 minutes long. They just, we kind of worked on these songs, but we'd never really worked out how to end them properly or where to end them. And that always stuck with me. And it's like, it's very easy to get caught up with that when you're writing a song and it's like, oh, this is really good. And before you know it, it's 4 or 5 minutes long and doesn't really need to be that long. I'm very much a fan of kind of like, you know, keep it really short, sharp. And that's one bit of advice. It's just, you know, since 1992, it's always kind of stuck in the back of my mind. Like, do we need to cut it here? Could this be condensed a little, you know, kind of like keep people wanting more rather than kind of, and sometimes if you're listening to a song, sometimes you can kind of, you can feel that it's like, this is a good song, but it just seems to be going that bit too long. You know, they could have cut a verse here. So that's going to be mine.
Yeah. I struggle with that because like, I agree with you, but sometimes I think like songs are getting shorter and shorter. It seems like.
They are, and I think this is where it sort of you if you've got a great song, I think also it can work in different ways. Like when I write, I feel like, yeah, I want to be able to hear this music on the radio. But equally, something I sent Miles over yesterday actually had a verse which could, you know, be added to it for a live performance or stripped down. Acoustic performance or an album version. I think a great song can work in various settings. I don't necessarily think it has to be a certain length or other, but I feel like a good song can work in various forms.
That's very true. Yeah. Okay, where do you see things with the band going down the road? Like, I know you have plans to possibly tour together, meet up and tour in the future. Like, where do you see things going? Like,
I would like to meet Miles in person again.
Yeah.
That would be I would like us to meet in person and find ourselves in a venue, preferably that has steps leading down to it rather than up to it. And we sit and we play. That's my short-term ambition, Miles, which might take 18 months. It might take 18 years.
I think we worked out how long it's been since we've actually stood in the same room in the same country together.
I think it is 18 years.
18 years. Yeah, I mean, it's very much, you know, we'd love to kind of meet up and, you know, and kind of like, you know, play live together and, you know, who knows, even do a bit of a little tour. But at the moment, it's very much, it's out of necessity, it's a recording only project. So we've got so many song ideas. It's just a matter of kind of like knuckling down and getting some out. So we've got a couple of singles that we're working on at the moment, and then we might kind of package everything up as a bit of an EP and then work toward, you know, whether it's another EP or getting to the point of just pulling everything together for an album or just single by single and we see how we go. So we're not going to be, you know, firing songs out at a rapid rate like some bands do. You know, both of us playing other bands and juggling a lot of other things, but we're pretty keen to get at least two more singles out by the end of the year, if we can. Putting a bit of pressure on you there, Simon.
Very cool.
Although the pressure's mainly on me because I've got to do the production.
I think to get one more single out before the end of the year would be a great achievement. Do you want
to give
an exclusive with the great title of our track, or shall we keep that secret?
It's up to you.
Yeah. Which one?
So I think our next one will probably be called Shoot That Shooting Star.
Okay. I like that. I like that.
Darker and a bit more mystic than Cavalry. Mm-hmm. That's how I see it. Yeah. But it's brewing somewhere in the Melbourne suburbs.
Yeah, it's brewing on my laptop at the moment. Yeah.
Okay.
We've got the drums down. The drums are down. The bass is almost down. So we're getting there.
Very cool. I look forward to that. Is there anything else, like including where to find you, all of that stuff?
Good point. Yeah. Instagram is where we do most of our social stuff. So I think it's sleepingwave_band, I think. But if you Google Sleeping Wave Scotland Australia, then we will be the first thing that comes up. And we are on Facebook. We don't do a lot on Facebook. We're starting to grow that one as well. But Instagram is where we kind of like where we hang out the most.
Okay. Yeah, that's most of my traction.
And if you wanna dive a bit further, Prolific, we do have a video on YouTube.
Yes.
We don't push it, but it is got some beautiful videos, visuals in it. So again, if you search Sleeping Wave Cavalry on YouTube, that should come through.
Yeah, and Cavalry is out pretty much on every streaming platform. It's on so many streaming platforms I've never heard of.
Yes.
But it's on all the main ones. It's on obviously Spotify, Apple, YouTube Music, Deezer, Tidal. And we're also on, we don't really talk about it much, but we are on Bandcamp. So you can find us there as well. And we need to be a bit more proactive with pushing Bandcamp. We've kind of like forgotten it a little bit. But yeah, Bandcamp as well.
I think so too. Like Bandcamp is a very, it's not perfect, but it's very supportive of like, it provides sort of a exchange of how you can directly support artists better than a lot of other.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, actually that's something we need to get a little more, give Bandcamp a little more love.
I do too as well. So I completely understand. Thank you guys so much for coming out. I could do another hour probably, but they only give me one.
Oh, thank you for having, and thank you for being the first radio station in the world that actually played our track.
So
you got that early spin a week before we even released it. So we just love that we're, you know, we're a band split, you know, between two countries on the other side of the world from each other. Mm-hmm. And the first radio station to give us a spin was equally as far, far away.
So when you're playing the O2 Arena, or Wembley or Madison Square Garden, remember
Yeah.
And I want to say thank you for that brilliant backdrop you've got. That is Sleeping Wave right there.
Thank you so much. Yeah, for the people that can't see, I just have a green screen of a kind of a beach, a kind of a
beautiful
mellow
tropical beach.
Yes.
But yeah, no, thank you very much. This has been really, really fun.
Yeah, really fun.
We love the show as well.
We can have you back on when the next song comes out.
Absolutely. We'll give you the early preview so you can spin it for anyone else as well.
Get to play it early again. Awesome. Yeah, we'll keep that going. Okay, thanks so much. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
I'll catch you soon. I'll be in touch soon.
Thank you soon.
Hey, thank you.
See ya.
Bye, guys. Anyone has ever had a heart, wouldn't turn around and break it. And anyone has ever played a part, wouldn't turn around and hate it. Sweetie Jane.
Tell me I'm wrong, 'cause I've been watching every move that you make. Haunt you steal in your makeup and heels, trouble for the man that you take. Every time you walk in the room, I couldn't ever be sure of a smile. We're never the same.
102.7 FM. Thanks for listening to Audio Salad. We will be back next week. We just heard Blue Rodeo in there with Try. As well, we heard Cowboy Junkies with the track Sweet Jane. Thanks so much to the band Sleeping Wave once again for coming in for that awesome interview. See you next time.